This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
Being reported in several precincts that the Jets are trying to trade Le'Veon Bell. And Le'Veon Bell is using the same method that got Jamal Adams out. He's becoming a pain in the backside regarding social media, but I'm not blaming him. I blame Jamal Adams. I don't blame Le'Veon Bell. Le'Veon Bell has been treated like an unwanted addition to the family since he signed a $52 million contract. Adam Gase didn't want him here. They could spin it whichever way they want. He hasn't used him well. And the Jets have a real problem, Don and Peter, when you think about it. You cannot continue to get rid of your best players. If your best players continue to want to get out, how will you ever build anything here? Jamal Adams was their best player. He wanted out, and he's out. Le'Veon Bell, although he's not the player that he was in Pittsburgh, is still a pretty darn good player on a team that doesn't have a lot of skill position players, and now he wants out. So where does that leave the Jets? Do they feel emboldened? Do they feel vindicated? Do they feel, you know what, we don't keep that sort of player around here that could cause problems? Or maybe it's the situation that you've built that great players don't want to be there. It's inexcusable to continue to lop off the best players on your team. You can't do it. You can't build something special if you continue to do that. Jamal Adams first and Le'Veon Bell next. The trade deadline, I believe, is November 3rd or 4th. So it's disgraceful. It's disgraceful. And I truly believe, from the outside looking in, because the coach doesn't want to come on the show, doesn't want to have to answer the questions every Monday or Tuesday. And that's fine. He has the right. But the bottom line is this. I get the sense that Adam Gase would rather be right about not wanting Le'Veon Bell than to use him the right way and prove himself wrong. So I call that a Pyrrhic victory in the business. What does it mean? So you show that you were right. We shouldn't have got him. We should have really loaded up on offensive linemen with all that money we spent. But again, it does point to the dysfunction of the Jet organization. Why was Mike Maccagnan, who was going to be shortly fired, allowed to make that free agency expenditure when his coach didn't want him? It just keeps going back. It's like a domino effect, Don. Everything's going to fall down from one point. So you let him draft people, you let him spend all that cap money, and then you got rid of him because, right, well, he just wasn't good enough. Well, now where does that leave you?
I don't know what to think about this story because honestly, this is almost like getting the jalopy painted before you send it to the garbage dump. I mean, you even if Bell was happy, he's probably somebody you'd look to deal anyway. He doesn't have any kind of future here. You know, trade him, get some sort of draft pick in exchange for him, and then move forward, right? I mean, Lev Bell can maybe get you something that's going to help whoever is going to be running this team next year. So Bell's unhappy. Yeah, of course he's unhappy. Jamal Adams was unhappy. Of course they're unhappy. We live in an era now in the NFL where people don't want to be on losing teams, and they're going to try to get themselves out. That's why this makes the case of firing Gase now is what you should do, because what do you think everybody's going to do now the rest of the season? Every loss, guys aren't going to want to come back from injury. Guys are going to complain. They're going to want to get traded. They're going to want to get waived. They're going to try to find a way to get out of here because it's not salvageable. Gase is going to be fired. He has to be fired. I mean, and Bell's going to be gone anyway. So these are two people that can't stand each other that aren't a part of the Jets' future anyway. So just trade Bell, get what you can for him, eventually replace Gase and move forward. Because Chris Carlin tweeted something out earlier, kind of defending Gase, saying that, to paraphrase, yeah, I'm not a Gase fan, but you know, Lev Bell's got all these problems with Gase, and he goes to the media instead of going to Gase. And then you got people, you know, defending Bell, and then there's people defending Gase. What does it matter? They're both not a part of this future anyway. Are you going to convince me of any reason why Gase should stay? Well, so what am I even going to argue about this? This is just one of a billion things, Peter. This right. guy has gotten wrong. So if he is trying to make Bell look bad to get him out, yeah, he probably is. But even if he isn't, even if he won this battle, it's not enough to save his job. It's not enough for me to be convinced he should be here anyway. So what does it matter at the end of the day?
So that's a fantastic point. there is no situation in which, unless they end up winning the rest of the season and turning this into a great season, which isn't going to happen, there is nothing saving this job. So you're right. But if there were people who were arguing for Gase, I would present that the handling of Le'Veon Bell has been another thing that's been disastrous. And the narrative that Le'Veon has been the one who's been a pain in the butt and who's liked things on social media and who's spoken about it. Let's not, Michael alluded to this earlier. Let's not paint the picture that Le'Veon is Jamal Adams. Le'Veon downplayed any issues they had for a very long time. And last season, with the exception of that bowling situation, basically was a great soldier throughout an awful, embarrassing season the whole year. Then, when I interviewed him and other people talked to him during the offseason, when pushed about the Gase thing, no, I don't know why people say that. Him and I have a good relationship, blah, blah, blah. And yet, here we are. So I refuse to then, with that information presented to me, let's not act like Le'Veon Bell has been loose and never cared. Maybe it deteriorated because Adam Gase is a pain in the ass. I know, I'm sorry. Maybe he's really a pain. Maybe he doesn't know how to manage talent. I mean, we know he's never managed the Bell situation properly. I mean, maybe Le'Veon's over the hill. Maybe he's not the guy he was in Pittsburgh, the year off, everything else. He's just not that guy. But Don, all of us on the outside, we're not expert football people. But we all, since he got here, did not understand his usage. So maybe it's just another important example of why Gase is not the guy.
Well, Bell with the Jets averages 3.3 yards per carry, which comes down to a punt. So if you carry it three times, that's 9.9 yards, not 10. You're going to punt. That's 51st out of 53 qualifying runners in the NFL during that span. Even if he's taken a step back, a half a step back from what he is in Pittsburgh, we watched the games. He has not been used. He was thrown to once in the game against the Cardinals. And then Gase gave some cockamamie excuse. One thing that I would disagree with you guys fully about, if you think it's a fait accompli that Gase is gone, you're wrong. I think the tie between Douglas and Gase is a lot stronger than you think. It is not a fait accompli. Now, maybe Johnson steps in and goes, yo, he's got to go. But he's the one who looks foolish, too, when he comes out and says he's a brilliant offensive mind. So I don't think it's a fait accompli that this guy is gone. This guy has a lot of power in that organization. A lot.
And that's fine. We can't do anything about that, Michael. I can't fire him, but I'm not going to change my opinion that he should be fired.
No, I agree.
I don't know what Chris Johnson said, but
you're saying that he's gone. I'm saying there's no sure thing he's gone.
That's right. That the semantics of that are right. I'm just saying that if I'm formulating my opinion on who's right and who's wrong on the Bell situation, even if I'm going to side with Gase, I still think he should go. And even if I side with Bell, I still think he's a tradable commodity that should be gone. So it really, to me, doesn't matter whose side you fall on. I still believe Gase should be fired. I still believe Bell should be traded. So this little back and forth to me isn't going to change my opinion that they both should be gone. And I'm not going to trade Bell to punish him. I'm going to trade Bell because I think he might be worth something to the future of my organization. So do it now.
At the most, you're going to get a seventh-round pick for him. They still owe him $6 million. They're going to have to eat a lot of the money as well. And I will tell you something that's a problem, okay, because it was a problem with Jamal Adams, and now this is the final straw here. Remember, Bell acted like a baby and wouldn't talk with the media after the game, and I know fans don't care about that. And then he went on Twitter, and he liked several tweets that suggested he should be traded because Gase has misused him. So Gase said yesterday, I hate that that's the route we go with all this instead of just talking about it, but it seems that's the way guys want to do it nowadays. They don't do it like that with the New England Patriots. It's not put up with. It's part of the rules of engagement. If you can put on a Patriot uniform, you're not going to play that game. And they, you know what? They accept it because it's a winning culture that's built. Players going on Twitter and ripping the organization is not what you want. It's not what should be done. But it's always being done with the Jets. Why? Because they're out of control there. They're not able to rein anything in. So, in essence, you get rid of your best players because you can't control them. Jamal Adams tweeted himself out of town. Le'Veon Bell, the final straw was a tweet. He also tweeted the hamstring stuff during the preseason. It's a joke. Something has to give at some point. Something has to give.
You have to start winning. And you know, Rex Ryan used to always bring it up, and it's brought up by every organization, culture, culture, culture. There's, you know what you do to change the culture? You win. All right? It doesn't, changing the uniforms or coming up with some PR stunt or some big trade or some big draft pick, the only thing that changes the culture is winning. So you got to start winning some games. Otherwise, this is the way the modern athlete is going to handle most situations. Tell me I'm wrong. That's the way it is in sports now. They want out. Jalen Ramsey want out of Jacksonville. Guess what? He found his way to get out. Adams wanted his way out of the Jets. He found his way to get out. No, and nobody's going to want to come here because of the losing. So that, so you got to start winning. You got to start making some good decisions to move forward and win games. And they're just not doing that, Michael. It's getting worse. So, yeah, they might keep Gase. Well, then that's their problem. But my opinion is I think the guy's got to go, and I think sooner than later, because you can't leave that message out there to the rest of the guys on the team that there isn't a level of accountability. And here's why the Zoom thing matters to me, all right, is because Bell can feel that sense of entitlement to walk away because Gase doesn't come on this show, because he should be on this show. Because every Jet head coach was always on this show. It was a part of the deal. Period. And you know how many bad seasons Rex had to go through, and Bowles had to go through, and Mangini had to go through, and Herm Edwards had to go through?
And they were always on the show.
So there's no accountability. And then your quarterback, every week's got to come on. He's got an injured shoulder and he came on because he's at least handling his business. So that's why it's important to do what you're supposed to do. That's why it's important for Bell to be on that Zoom call, even if the fans don't think it's necessary. It's a level of accountability. And when you allow that stuff to go on, that means everybody else on the team feels like, I don't have to do my job. I don't have to fight through injury. I don't have to show up. That's why if you keep Gase as the head coach, Michael, this is going to be the same thing down the road. And then after the trading deadline, you're not going to be able to do anything about these players. How do you think all these players are going to go about their business now if they know that you can get away with it? So if you just smile and grin and bear it and let Bell do what he wants to do, then it's just going to be one player after the other that's going to do this the rest of the season. And there's going to be no accountability.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Amazon Prime just paid $145 million for the rights to Coming to America 2, and it will premiere on Amazon Prime on December 17th. A must watch.
Oh, my God, yes.
Have to. What happens to the prince? Does he become king of Zamunda? I need to know.
I mean, I don't care. I just know it's going to be funny. Like, right,
I have
Peter,
a lot
like,
of faith.
I don't really care about the storyline, because at the end of that movie, I wasn't like, I wonder what happened to them. I just know that for 2 hours, however long it's going to be, they're going to entertain me. And if it comes anywhere close to what they accomplished the first time, then great job.
Does McDowell still exist? These are things
it's a
I
great,
want.
That's a major concern and question.
What a movie.
What a movie is right. What a talent. What a talent. What a movie. T-Mobile called to the bullpen, where listeners weigh in on all things MLB. Let's go to Joe in Colonia. Joe, what's up?
Hey, Mike, Don, Peter, thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for making it.
I got a couple quick questions for you. One, if George was still around, do you think he'd believe in all this analytics stuff?
No.
I don't either. And my other one was, you brought up a good point. You asked if Boone has the same freedom as Martin would have or Buck would have. And you know what? I can't believe that they would have the same freedom as that. Because Billy Martin, I don't even think, listened to George. So why would...
No, no manager today, I believe, Joe, has near the freedom, that any of the freedom that managers as recently as Joe Torre had. That's why Joe Torre and Girardi, Joe Torre and Cashman butted heads. Because, you know, the analytics group, which was in its early stages then, would put a projected lineup on the desk and Torre would crumple it up and throw it away. He's not going to listen to somebody to tell him what to do.
But this is where I think Boone needs to be careful, is that, you know, kind of we call them nerds, right? And nerds have trouble talking to girls. I think analytic guys have trouble talking to ballplayers. And that's what the manager's for. To kind of sell them on everything and get them on board. So if the true failing of game two was Hap not being on board, is that a Boone failure? I think it is. And I think to them it is. The numbers worked. But, Aaron, your job is to sell these guys and convince them it's the right thing to do. Now, Hap is ultimately wrong, too, Michael, because you got to do what you're told, okay?
But
he couldn't come that far out of the blue. You still have to go out there and execute and do your job. But he could probably do his job a lot better if he understood it and was on board with it. And could
I don't think he was on board with it, but he did it. He didn't refuse to do it. I mean, he told them I'd be more comfortable starting. At least he's honest. You want players to be honest.
And at that point, does Boone have to go back and say, listen, your plan's a little flawed here. Hap's not completely on board. Maybe we need to try Montgomery. Or maybe we got to go in a different direction. But Jay Hap is not 100% on board. Now, if they said to Boone, I don't care, do it anyway, then it's on them. But if Boone was job was to convince him and he didn't, then is that Boone's failure?
I mean, you can't convince somebody if they're not convincible. I mean, then you have to go to Plan B. I mean, if Jay Hap's I know what Howell's saying. He's appeared 11 times in the postseason as a reliever, but not in these circumstances where he's essentially a second starter. And
hey,
he also, the problem with Jay Hap, he hadn't pitched in all that time. When Jay Hap pitches every 5 days, he's really good.
Right.
And when he's taken off the schedule, he's not really good. T-Mobile called to the bullpen. We're listeners weighing on all things MLB. We go to Steve in Nassau County. Steve. Hello, Steve. Stevie, Steve.
Oh, it's sad.
Steve.
He had some nasty things to say, too, I was told.
Really?
Yeah, well, thought it was a weak interview that we didn't ask the tough questions.
Oh,
and he didn't even hang in there.
I wanted to hear that.
I was really,
who's this? That's
disappointing because I was really looking to get an education on how to do this job from a caller. That stinks.
Let's go to Andrew in Queens. Andrew.
Fellas, how we doing?
Great. How are you, Andrew?
All right. So I'm going to say one good thing about Hal and then two things I didn't like. The one thing I do like about Hal is that, like you mentioned early on in the show with, you know, Gase and Le'Veon, is that Hal came on and he took credit. And at least he came on and he wanted to explain, you know, how he felt and everything. So I totally respect that, and I think he's a stand-up guy for doing that. With that said, though, the number one thing I didn't like was the fact that he does lean too into the analytical approach. And I get it. That's how the game is now, and that's not going to change. With that said, though, since 2000, the Yankees have 2009. That's it. They have one championship, and they have two AL pennants. So obviously the analytical approach, while it may work for the regular season, works. It doesn't work for the postseason. Now, the second point I wanted to make was that and you could already tell once you brought up the coronavirus and the pandemic and finances, whatever, I have a hard time listening to an owner, especially an owner of the New York Yankees, arguably the most iconic franchise in the world. I think it's fair to say when, 2 years ago, MLB got the $5 billion contract from Fox. And then this past year, they got the $3.7 billion contract from TBS. The game is making money. And I get it. Everyone is hurting, and everyone is going to continue to hurt. But if that's going to be an issue for a team like the Yankees, for not bringing a guy back like DJ LeMahieu or someone possibly like Tanaka, it's hard for me as a fan to hear that. Because I know that the Yankees, look, Aaron Judge, Gerrit Cole, Stanton, top 20 jersey sales. So they are making money elsewhere, and I know that. And things are going to change, but it's tough for me to hear that from an owner of the Yankees.
Well, that's fair to say, but let me ask you this, Andrew. They were paying the players, as they should have. I certainly changed my tune on that, 100% of the prorated salary. They didn't get one bit of attendance or any of the other income that they would normally get. So it's. I think the Steinbrenner family owns like 55 to 60% of the team. There are partners there too, Andrew, so... if they all of a sudden expected to make $100 million this year and then they lost $100 million, you got to explain to the partners, you know, they're in it to make money.
And look, I totally get that, but I'm sure there's also other, you know, there's also other streams of revenue that's coming in, because I'm sure that there are streaming and advertisement.
No one's holding a telethon for them.
No, of course not.
But they are running a business, and if they lost a lot of money this year, and you'll see it throughout sports. I mean, that's why, you know, players don't want caps in baseball. I get it. You don't want to have your salary limited to what you could make. But at least a cap will tell us what's going on. The cap in the NBA is going to lower next year because they lost money. The cap in the NHL, there's going to be more escrow. I can't even explain what it is because they lost money. But in baseball, they don't open their books like that. But I guarantee you that they lost money. So how do they want to absorb that? Some teams might look at it and go, this is great. This is an estate sale where I could get really, really great stuff for cheap because it's a distressed situation. Or they could say, we're distressed as well. I'm not spending more money. So it's going to be interesting to see where they go. I don't think the Yankees are going to cut payroll, but if fans think that they're going to spend, you know, another $50 million and raise the payroll up to close to $300 million because they're going to get everything they... I don't think that's going to happen. Yeah. I just don't think that's prudent financially for them.
The salary cap makes them partners. They're not really partners in this. So when the owners lose 40% of their revenue, think about that. So I don't even know how much money that ends up being because I don't know how much money the Yankees make. They make a lot more money than other teams, but it's still 40%. So their 40% is worth more than Kansas City's 40%. That's a lot to lose. Now they're still making money, and as you said, they're not going to hold a telethon for them. But when it comes down to now spending money, you want to spend more money on top of them losing the 40%, and I think they're going to lose a good percentage next year because I don't know when there's going to be a full Yankee Stadium. Right?
That also goes into it, Don. How much money they're going to spend? What happens if there are no fans again?
Right, exactly. And I don't think there's going to be 55,000 people at Yankee Stadium on opening day. Maybe we're at 25% capacity, but we're midway through October. We don't see anybody at MetLife Stadium. We'll not be a football fan that will watch the Jets and Giants, right? That takes us through December. I don't know. They won't make any revenue down in spring training, and we'll see how spring training ends up being at the end of the day. There's a lot of revenue that's going to be lost. Plus, the ratings are down. Are the ratings going to jump back up again? There's so much money that could be lost next year, too.
You talked about it when the whole pandemic started. This could have an effect on sports for years to come. Not just this year, not just next year, years to come, where it can have an alterable effect on the way sports is paid for.
I would love to see, Michael, I don't know how many luxury boxes there are at Yankee Stadium. I'm sure there are way many than there were at the old place, right? And there's companies that spend like $250,000 a year on
a million dollars a suite.
All right. How many of those companies, A, are still in business, all right? B, are going to be able to throw $1 million at a suite for next year? Or are they going to say, you know what, I can lay a bunch of people off or get the suite. You know, I'm not going to lay people off. No suite this year. Then that's $1 million the Yankees don't get. So, this is going to, we're going to feel this for a long time.
All right, we have Keyshawn coming up at 5:30. We'll continue this this thread as we start the 5 o'clock hour. Of course, ENN, which is always a highlight of everyone's day. The Tuesday ENN is the one that I wait for each week.
But yesterday was so big, it's hard to follow up.
But you can do it.
Well, I think I can too.
Tuesday, I'm convinced you will.
Tuesday used to be, when I was growing up, one of my favorite days because I loved gym, and gym was always on Tuesday when I was in grade school.
I am not a Tuesday guy.
And Tuesday was, Michael, you remember this. Tuesday was always when you had Happy Days, Laverne and Shirley, Three's Company. That was like, Tuesday was a big night of television, big night.
I always was very curious about the hijinks involving the Ropers. How were they going to get involved?
It's a great point.
With the oversexed wife and the husband that wanted no part of her. That was more intriguing to me than Chrissy and Janet.
And also, how many characters in television in the 70s were breaking down that wall?
Oh, not many.
Right? Where Mr. Roper would look into the camera, probably making what would right now be considered an off-color joke.
Chris Hogan, ankle put on the IR, and the Jets continue to upgrade their skill position players.
I guess the great thing of not having a lot of talent is when it gets hurt, you're not losing that much.
But Peter, you're going to love this. They have signed Lamar Jackson, though.
Signed Lamar Jackson. This is
cornerback.
I was surprised they lost by 20 with Lamar Jackson on Sunday.
This is cornerback Lamar Jackson.
I was wondering if anybody else picked up on that Sunday. Like you're hearing the Jets and Lamar Jackson. It's like, and how about the Arizona wide receiver Keyshawn Johnson too, and wearing number 19?
You know,
I
don't know if anyone listening can confirm this, by the way, but my friend who's a Ravens fan was watching the Ravens game on the ticket. And said that Greg Gumbel no less than 5 times referred to his quarterback as Kyler Murray. Have you heard anything about this?
No.
Very.
That sounds like something I would have heard of.
I wonder if anyone listening can confirm or deny this, that it happened during the Ravens game.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN. This is the Michael K. Show.
Hal Steinbrenner, the managing general partner, co-chairperson of the New York Yankees.
We invested a lot of time, energy, money into the team last offseason, and we all felt that we had a team that could win a championship, and we failed to do that. We didn't even come close.
Do you look back and say that maybe this team hasn't lived up to that change at Manny?
Aaron Boone is a good baseball man. He's a good leader. Aaron Boone will be back next year. That's just a fact.
Do you look at this season as a failure?
Our objective was to win a world championship. We failed in that endeavor. Does that mean the entire season was a failure? No, I don't think winning 10 in a row was a failure. I look at the season as a whole. We failed in our objective, but there were positives and there were successes along the way.
Do you realize how angry Yankee fans are?
Yes, of course, and I understand it. They deserve better than the results they got this year.
This is the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN.
All right, so we hear from Hal Steinbrenner at 4 o'clock. And you heard a couple of snippets of the conversation, about 20-minute conversation that we had with the managing general partner of the Yankees. And here are the highlights. And if I'm missing anything, Don and Peter could chime in. Boone, there's no chance he's going anywhere, and I don't believe he should anyway. So, you know, you heard Hal Steinbrenner said he's coming back. Steinbrenner actually seems like he was on board with the Game 2 decision, which he said was a decision made by Boone, but they just didn't have everybody that did their part, meaning Jay Happ. So if you want to interpret it, doesn't seem like he's that thrilled with Jay Happ, who probably is not going to be back next year anyway because he didn't reach his option levels to kick in the third year. All in on analytics, all in on Brian Cashman, believes in all that, highly disappointed, thought they should have gone farther, thought they would go farther, but they didn't. This is a guy that is just like you, the fan, except he has more money invested in it because, you know, he's yelling and screaming at the TV as they're losing that game. And, you know, his wife has to close the door because they've got a young daughter. And, you know, obviously he's just as upset as you are. This is a family business for him, carrying on the legacy of his dad. And but, you know, the bottom line is this. For those that are all in on analytics, the one quirk in the analytic thread is that it doesn't really work in short sample sizes, which means it doesn't work in the postseason. But the Yankees would tell you, well, the Dodgers are all in. They're in the NLCS. The Rays are in. They were in before anybody got into the pool. They're two games up over the Astros. The Astros are in. I mean, really in. And the Braves are in their own way. I don't think as heavily as the other ones, but they're in. So it works for some, but and he did admit that he thinks it should also have an element of boots on the ground. Those are his words, where he involves scouts and things like that. But, you know, my rebuttal to that would be, yeah, I believe that that's how you choose players. But I think that once it comes to game plans and stuff like that, that is 1,000% analytic. I don't think there's very much of anybody's gut that goes into any kind of move.
But I don't think you can judge things by saying whether analytics work or don't work. Everybody's doing it. Be like saying, well, you know, you don't, if you lose with a good quarterback in football, well, you know, obviously you don't need a good quarterback. No, just everybody's got a good quarterback if you want to try to win. So everybody's got analytics. So somebody's got to win, somebody's got to lose, right? You went up against a heavily analytic team, they won. So the analytics worked for the Rays, it didn't work for the Yankees. What it tells me is that there's got to be something beyond the analytics. Maybe that means keeping Pierce in 2018 for the Boston Red Sox when the analytics told you he should be taken out. Maybe it means, you know, straying from it just a little bit, keeping that pitcher in an extra inning, or going with your gut at times that it ends up being the difference. And maybe game two would have been different had maybe it wasn't so analytically driven. If they could have convinced Hap to do it, or because Hap wasn't into it, not doing it at all and going longer with Garcia. Or maybe seeing Garcia in the first inning and going, you know what, I want to leave him in for a couple of more innings and see what happens. Because you can't just judge it, Michael, on does the analytics work or not. Everybody's doing it.
And if anybody wants to talk about Garcia throwing 27 pitches in the first inning, I think that's ridiculous. If you watched the Braves game yesterday, big win over the Dodgers, Max Fried, who's had a great year, he was so jacked up and pumped up about being in the playoff game, he threw 29 pitches in the first inning. And you know what happened after that? He settled down.
Hey, do you
he
know
what took a deep breath and slowed the game down. That's what great players do.
But do you know the number that you really want to get at for an inning per pitch?
Yeah, I think it's like 15. Al Leiter said 15 pitches is like a fighter training for a three-minute round.
Right, so 15 is the number. So, yeah, if you go over 15, it's a problem. But let's not get crazy. Already went 12 over 15, which means you're going to have to make it up someplace else. But I don't think anybody thought Garcia was going to go eight innings.
All he had to do was give him four or five innings, just like Jordan Montgomery.
So he wasn't any kind of pitch count per se. You know, if you've got no bullpen and you're asking your pitcher to go out there and pitch a complete game, you know what? 27 pitches in the first inning is going to be a problem. But if you're only asked to go four or five innings, then 27 pitches in the first inning is zero problem. So I just think there's got to be a little bit more nuance to it. I'd be concerned if I'm the Yankees that it's been three straight years where it just seems to be the same thing. And they've got a lot of decisions to make. But I'm not. What are they missing, Michael? Like, what do you look at and say, all right, well, they got to spend more money on what?
Well, they need more starters, and you know that's obvious. And they need to deepen their bullpen. I think you could win the Wizards lineup. But even Hal brought up the lineup. You know, sometimes it doesn't show up.
Right, but by design, when spring training started, and I remember where I was when I heard the news about Severino, I was at the – you were off. Peter and I were doing the show. Remember, Peter? And I was at the Coliseum getting ready to call a Ranger-Islander game when we found out Severino was out for the year because of Tommy John.
Right.
So going
I was about to say, because you don't – yeah, you need another starter, but, I mean, they thought they had a starter.
Right, so they went into the year thinking, all right, we're great. We just spent a bunch of money on Cole. We've got Severino coming back. We got Paxton coming back. You know, they felt good about this rotation, but then guys get hurt. All right, so spend a ton of money on starting pitching. But what do you do about the offense that kind of deserts you late? Is there more offense to get? Or is it just,
I mean, I think they also have to tighten up defense more than offense.
Okay, but there's little tweaks here.
Did you get the feeling, though, that Gary Sanchez is coming back?
I got zero feeling he's coming back.
I thought he spoke that we... You know, we'll try to straighten him out, and he's going to work his butt off.
But I just thought what happened with Higashioka told the story, right?
Yeah, but I mean, did they completely forget all the stuff that used to make them excited about Gary Sanchez? I don't know.
Well, was that about an indication of what's to come, or was that just them desperately trying to find something to get a win?
That's a good point. I mean, they're probably saying that's the best thing for short term.
Right, but that doesn't mean
on the long term, we still believe that Gary Sanchez could hit 40 home runs.
Well, and I think a lot of it has to do with the fact, okay, let's say you give up on Sanchez. Well, then who's your starting catcher? I don't think Higashioka is your starting catcher.
Maybe you pair him up with somebody else.
Then you're looking for someone else, and they're going to have to evaluate, is there somebody out there better than what we have? You know,
It's JT Realmuto, and I don't believe you're going to pay $25 million a year for a catcher.
I think there's a lot of money that you could throw around, but I don't know if that makes you feel any better about what the problem is.
Now,
you know, it's tough.
If you missed the Hal interview, it is up on the podcast right now, so you could give it a listen. You know who else is probably more upset than Yankee fans and Hal Steinbrenner about the Yankees losing? I would say that it's probably... TBS and Fox.
Oh, my God.
TBS's game two yesterday.
Oh, don't even tell us.
It's the lowest rated American League Championship Series game in history. About 1.4 million people watched it. Lowest rated ever.
Well, let me ask you this. You know the teams that are involved here, all right? Mm-hmm. What will the World Series beat the NBA Finals? Will they get more than 5 million people?
If the Dodgers are in it. If the Dodgers are in it, will. If the Braves aren't in it, I don't think it will.
Braves aren't bad. Braves do have a following, but not to the level of the Dodgers. You get a Rays-Braves World Series, Michael, they're going to probably get 5-6 million people watch it.
Rays-Braves. I mean, that might, you might be optimistic there.
I mean, Astros, at least people might hate Astros, watch the Astros. People,
Houston is the fourth largest city in the country.
And people will hate watch the Astros, right? But I guess they didn't yesterday, but you know what I mean. But I don't think the numbers are going to be tremendous. I think baseball's kind of stuck in the same thing that everybody else is stuck
in. But
at
least baseball is having its championship when they always have its championship. Basketball was in a place where you're not used to having it.
Well, here's the difference, is that they used to strategically avoid football during the World Series, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to be able to avoid that. They're going to be playing every day. So you're going to go up against Sunday night football. You're going to go up against Monday night football, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to be able to, and Thursday night football. So depending on how long the series goes, three of the seven games might be played against nationally televised football. That's going to kill them.
Time to make the T-Mobile call to the bullpen, where listeners weigh in on all things MLB, and we'll go to Sully in Holtsville. We haven't heard from Sully in a while.
Yeah,
what's
really
up?
What's up, buddy?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking the call. Appreciate it.
You got
Don, you being a big Ranger guy, the Rangers and the Yankees both have had, over the past few years, windows opening where there's money to be spent, there's players to be had. So you, as fans, you say, wow, I'm looking forward to the next 5 years, 7 years, what have you. But the window can be closed quickly. Not so much for the Rangers. It's still early in their window opening, so to speak. But the Yankees, on the other hand, they're going to have to make some hard decisions soon. Judge, Sanchez, Torres, LeMahieu this year. Do they bring back Tanaka? Do they bring back Gardner? There's some hard decisions to be made here, and they're going to have to make tough ones on the young players. Do you want to move Torres back to second? If so, do you move LeMahieu to first and trade Voit? Do you move LeMahieu to third and trade Urshela and then come up with a shortstop? I'm not saying Lindor. I'm just saying a shortstop that would make the infield stronger with LeMahieu at third, a strong fielding shortstop, and Torres is a better fielding second baseman than shortstop. Voit, I have no problem with. If I'm going to trade one corner or the other to make room for LeMahieu, I'd move Urshela and I'd keep Voit. That would be
would
my
move
particular
Urshela?
Choice.
Wow, that's a tough one,
yeah,
man.
Absolutely. But there's going to be tough choices coming, guys.
But why would you make that
everybody.
One? A guy who's eminently affordable,
yeah,
that is a 300
that.
Hitter right, well, and a plus defender.
Absolutely, Michael. And because, first of all, you probably get something back from him. But let me ask you this. You bring back LeMahieu. We're talking about it, and it makes all the sense in the world. And why would you not? But if you bring him back, you're going to play him at second. That means you're going to leave Torres at short. Torres is a 15-year player. That's a guy that you're going to sign.
Yeah, but if you read the paper, Sully, and Joel Sherman even intimated maybe you could trade Torres.
Would you trade a 23-year-old kid rather than any of these other guys, 29-year-old Urshela, 29-year-old Voit, 31-year-old LeMahieu? Torres is the kid you keep it. But where are you keeping him? If you keep him at short, then you have room for LeMahieu at second, and then you live with what you got. But if you moved him to second, and then you chose where to put LeMahieu at what corner, I would rather put him at the third corner. Yes,
well, you'd
you're
have
losing
to, if,
a
if
quality
you're
going to
trade the majors home run leader in Voit, okay, you're going to have to get a top-flight starting pitcher. And maybe you can make a blockbuster deal, Voit and Andujar, because as long as Urshela's there, Andujar's a non-player. He can't play. He can't play in the outfield. Your DH spot is taken by Stanton. So he becomes a great trade chip, which you'd be trading at a lower value. So, yeah, that's why we said, and Peter mentioned, these are really tough franchise-altering decisions. That's not trying to be too dramatic. These are really, really tough calls.
But when you think about the window closing, however, they're tough decisions, but nothing in the realm of we've got to do it, otherwise we're on our way to being a 100-loss team. Right? It's nothing like that. They're still going to be great.
It's just decisions that will deeply affect the fan base and that are scary because you potentially face letting go of someone and watching them do well somewhere else when you've put in so much. And it's like it's almost like they're loaded with players that you don't want to see that happen with, but how many can you afford to keep?
And you know, the LeMahieu cost is going to be prohibitive, although Joel Sherman in today's post kind of brought it down to more of a realistic, maybe they could get him for $20 million a year for 3 years. That I would do. Because, hey, and when you think $20 million a lot, right, here's what you have to consider. The Yankees will tender him, which means that they can't lose him without getting draft pick compensation back. You know what the tender is this year? It's over $19 million. So right there, if the Yankees could get him for just 1 year at $20 million, they would rejoice and go year to year because he's 32 years old. But there would be a team out
there. I would have no problem paying him $25 for 1 year.
Right. They would love that. That's why if Trevor Bauer is true to his word, oh boy, Trevor Bauer, talk about thirst traps to every single team in baseball on Twitter. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. Hey, Dodger fans, don't you think you need a new pitcher? Hey, Angel fans, how about another star? I mean, stop.
Yeah, it's really.
He's anybody who takes him is getting a good starter, but you're getting a lot. You're getting a lot with him.
He's showing
stuff
a lot
that
of
you
leg.
Can't control. Let's go to Mike in Queens. Michael.
Hey, how's it going, guys? I just want to say I think that Yankees fans are everyone's way overreacting to this postseason. I think that we scored a ton of runs, much more than last season. It was one game, the last game, that we didn't score enough runs. Also, no one seems to be talking about this, but on that Rousseau at-bat, that strike, it was the third pitch of the at-bat was arguably a strikeout that the umpire missed, and Chapman could have got out of that inning.
According to the box.
I mean, it was borderline. I mean, the umpires were crazy, but again, they were bad for both sides. But I mean, they can't hit 10 runs every single game. They just got outpitched in one game. They're way better.
All you needed was three. In
Mike,
game five.
I tell you what, you're saying the fans are overreacting. I don't think so. This team is better than this. This team should be in the American League Championship Series or World Series. They're better than this. They're built to win a World Series. How do you not get disappointed?
I agree, and I am disappointed, but it's also like the sky isn't falling. It was a weird season, over 162 games. I think they would have proved that they were way better.
They still made the playoffs. So over 162 games, they would have made the playoffs. So they still would have had to prove themselves in the postseason. Hey, no, I don't agree with that.
I don't know. You know, let's not forget, with a 162-game season and the old playoff format, you don't know what would have happened. Maybe some of that inconsistency would have led to them possibly missing the playoffs altogether.
So they won 33 games out of 60. So let's double 60. That's 120. That's 66 games. I mean, they would have won about 90 games.
Right. And that
so there's no guarantee you make the playoffs with 90 games under the old system. So don't tell me over 162. They made the playoffs. So then the regular season is off the books. Now, what do you do in the postseason? They got to the postseason, and they lost in the ALDS. That has nothing to do with a shortened season.
Which is essentially all they probably would have gotten the opportunity to do under a 162-game schedule, because they wouldn't have had to play Cleveland, right? That was a pandemic thing.
Right. But they would have probably had to play in a wild card game.
Wild card game in which game five would have been in Tampa instead of San Diego.
No. A wild card game of one game.
They could have lost in that. Well, that's right. Because you're right. That's a good point.
It would have been the Yankees against the Indians in the wild card, I think.
I mean, listen, that guy can think what he wants. It sounded like he was a Yankee fan, but this is three straight years. It's one of two things. It's either, all right, we lost to a better team. Well, then why, with everything they have at their disposal, three straight years they're playing somebody that's better than them? When are they going to start being the better team? Because really, the only series, Michael, this team has won over the last 3 years, because forget the Cleveland for a second, all right? The only series that they've won was against Minnesota, who hasn't won a playoff game since 2004. That's it, right? They lost to the Red Sox in the first round, in the divisional round, when I'm talking series now. They beat Minnesota to go to the League Championship Series last year, and they lost to Tampa. So the only series they've won in the last 3 years was against a team that can't beat anybody in the postseason. Why is that? Or it's just, hey, it's just that's one of those things, man. That's just the crapshoot of the postseason. Well, when do they roll a seven? When's it their turn to roll a seven?
In another edition of Boy Players Say Dumb Things, Zach Greinke of the Astros, right? This is his quote. Actual quote by an actual human being. For me, it's nice not having fans in the stands because there's no one trying to talk to you and ask for autographs and wanting to take pictures, all that stuff. I don't like any of that stuff. Really, Zach?
You know what?
Do you like making $25 million a year? Hey, the fans are the reason you do.
There's a lot of people out there that just do not like people, right, Peter? He seems like someone that would just really be comfortable with a planet that had 500 people.
That's still just a bad Come on,
but
man.
Here's there's two things at play here. There's, all right, he feels that way. There's a lot of people that feel that way.
But he says it.
Why do you say it? How do you win to say it?
There's
how
no
does
win
that?
There.
Who do you win over, Peter? Like, there's what no contest you winning?
He said the thing with Zach Greinke, he doesn't care. He doesn't care what you think of him. He's just he's a different bird.
And who's asking?
He's supposed to have some social
game.
Anxiety or whatever. He just doesn't like being around people. But he's chosen a profession where people kind of pay the bills.
When does a pitcher have to worry about autographs, Michael? He's not there at batting practice. Nobody, you know, he goes from the bullpen to the dugout. They're not bothering him between innings. Maybe when he leaves the ballpark. But he can go. He can sit in the bus. The bus is usually under the belly of the stadium. Well, when does he have to worry about autograph seekers, where it's an issue?
Amazing, just amazing.
That's weird, man. You know what? That's a bad guy.
It's a bad look. It's a bad.
Well, bad guys usually give off a bad look.
I'm going to give you a good thing. Okay,
what's that?
Coley Harvey used to work for us at ESPN, right? He covered the Yankees. Really talented young man. And he now works for Fox and for the Big Ten Network. I mean, we let a really talented kid get away. He's that good. He had not seen his parents since January. They live in Atlanta.
Okay.
And he surprised them the other day. He took a COVID test, got a negative back, got in the car, didn't interact with anybody, drove right to Atlanta where his parents live, and opened the door and surprised them. And he was... He was taping it on his phone. It is so beautiful. In a world now where very few loving gestures, to see his parents' reaction to seeing their son is beautiful. So if you have a chance on Twitter, go to @ColeyHarvey, ColeyHarvey. It made me smile. It got me choked up. It was beautiful in a time where we don't see that often. So just give it. I think it's like less than a minute. It'd be worth your time to actually see some goodness in the world.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, Karen Veenstra, among others, are giving Greinke the benefit of the doubt because of his anxiety disorder.
Right.
But, you know, if he had said that... I just
say it, whether you have an anxiety disorder or not.
Yeah, that doesn't do it. If you say it exactly like, well, hey, I have an anxiety disorder. So to be honest, even though I know the fans are missed, for me, there's a little less stress because interacting with people is really challenging for me. If you wanted to say that, I guess you could. You know what I'm saying? But the way he said it, certainly not.
See, that's it's all. Correct me if I'm wrong, Michael. The percentage of ball players that would love just the fans to poof and disappear is probably somewhere in the 90 percentile.
No. That would want media to disappear.
Well, just
not
having
fans.
To deal with autograph seekers
no,
and stuff. Listen,
not,
they
no.
got a job to do.
I wouldn't say it's 90. I wouldn't even
but
think it's
I don't think any of them would say it, but I think, you know, in a perfect world, they're probably like, I don't want to have to deal with the fans. And
but
get
I think they appreciate fans more now after this year.
Yeah, they probably do. But, you know, how many times have you had to convince an athlete, Michael, that without the fans, you wouldn't have a job?
Like, but I believe that 90% of athletes would like to see the media bleed out in front of them.
Wow.
But there's a lot of people, all right?
It's a lot.
A lot
Some
of
very
people,
particular ones with me.
That just feel uncomfortable around other people. But you don't say that when you're talking about the paying customer. I don't care. Even if you have.
And also, the reason why there's no paying customer is the reason you don't say it. We're in the middle of a pandemic when about 250,000 Americans have died. Don't say it now. I don't care what kind of disorder you have. Don doesn't like being around people. He fakes it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we talk all the time about how awkward Don is. It's like he's
very
never talked
awkward.
To another human being in his life. But he doesn't complain about it. In fact, he seems like the salt of the earth.
I try
right.
to fight through it. I mean, you guys
do.
Are dead right. I mean, listen, I am socially awkward. I'm really bad. Michael has pointed it out many times. That
sometimes while you're in the middle, of a conversation, he points it
that,
out.
That interaction I had with Maggie Gray, I was completely uncomfortable. And then
See,
you came
he
over.
Admits it.
And you came over and you announced it to the world and made me feel better.
Right. So now Maggie doesn't think, wow, what an awkward jerk. She knows that there's actually a clinical reason.
Right. She knows this guy's barely.
I don't know
barely...
how clinical it is. I've been, never been diagnosed, but.
Right, but
and no, you, I mean, you announcing it to her didn't help the situation at all. I was being completely sarcastic. I think it's a bad guy level. You did that.
Wow,
right, Peter?
Real.
No, I mean, well, it depends. I want to keep going with the bit with Michael. The truth is, of course, I agree with you, Don. But no, I would like to say, just for the purpose of fun, that I think Michael did a great service to you when he interrupted you mid-conversation and apologized to the person you were talking to for you being such a freak. That always makes it less awkward when you're talking to someone.
No more awkward thing ever happened than when Don and Gigi drove to Citi Field. That was brutal.
That I can't. We don't know exactly what happened. I mean, we received audio. I was never able to verify whether the audio we got was in fact real.
Right.
But if that is actually what took place between Don and Gigi, it's not what you want. You know,
she has denied that I was awkward. Why would I be awkward? I knew her for so long.
I know, but it's so hard,
Michael.
For you.
I have children. I got married.
Well, no,
I didn't worry about Nancy. I didn't have a K rotation. I had a very small market rotation, but I had a rotation. How did I make that work? Is that another miracle?
I do well.
So I'm just a miracle maker, right? I mean, I'm on the air when I can't speak the English language. I was able to have relationships despite being socially awkward. Peter, I'm a miracle.
I used to love to go head first.
Right. We know.
Well, you
that
are
might
a miracle.
Have a lot to do with it, too.
I think you should. You could.
I'm sure
you should stick to that miracle. Miracle. A miracle that you're actually getting points with the Buffalo Bills today. Another miracle.
Again, Jarv is defending me on Twitter.
Now, Jarv's wrong. You should have recused
what
yourself.
What line
from,
did you get?
Because
at?
That line looks fishy. And you're right. We all could have picked it. I didn't pick it because I said that's got to be wrong.
You know what? You know what this is. This is the short line at motor vehicle that nobody goes on. Because they figure something must be up. There's only two people online, so I'm going to get on the line with 20 people. But you know what? I got on the line with two people, and I'm out the door while you're still waiting online. I'm getting 6.5. It's an absolute gift. But guess what? The gift was sitting there for you. And I even brought it up on the air.
But I wouldn't
Andrew's
take
giving
advantage.
A 6.5. Should I take that? You're like,
I
yeah,
would
that's
not
what
take advantage
you.
Of a line that's skewed because of the pandemic. You're taking advantage of a national tragedy to get extra points. It's ridiculous.
Again, I appreciate what Michael's trying to do, but... This is absurd, Michael. He got basically a free win. How many points on this game, Don?
6.5.
No. I don't know if I've ever rooted for a team more than I'm rooting for the Titans.
It's just a one-pointer, isn't it? Or two?
I'm getting. I think right now it's. I think somewhere they had it at 3.5, and I'm getting.
No. What are you putting on it? Your game.
It's a one-pointer.
Oh, this is just a one-pointer? Oh.
But yeah, that's a one-point that breaks the tie.
And but I honestly, because I knew this was going to happen. I made it my one-pointer, so it would be less of an issue. But I brought it up, Peter. Then why didn't Michael say, you're not allowed to take that? Why was that not a conversation?
Who am I? When did I get elected?
Who are you?
Grand Poobah.
It's the name of the show. Look behind you.
That's Michael a good point K. by Don. That's right.
Michael K.
Without you, we're just the show.
You, Peter, can you outline to me the number of times that Michael bit his tongue when he was upset about something and didn't say it?
Never.
Oh, you should only know because I bit my tongue. You don't know. There's things that you do that annoy me, and I never say a word because I love you.
So why do you say the times?
Because it's just too over the top, the times that I do say it.
But why didn't you take it? So you're telling me.
Because I'm not taking advantage of a
philanthropy.
Tragedy.
It was sports philanthropy what you did
right.
on Friday. You looked at that and said it's not right to take it.
Right.
Peter,
I hope you get hoisted by your own petard and they lose by 8.
Hey, listen, if it happens, it happens. But the point is, I was given something, and I took it. I don't understand, Peter.
I mean, this is an unbelievable gift.
And did I not call it to his attention on Friday? I even brought it up.
To all of us. I mean, Bear's disgusted by it. I don't know if you can tell, but he's really upset. But Bear, I'm sorry. I'm with Don on this. We had the right to take it. We didn't do it.
Why didn't you take it, Peter? Was it sports philanthropy for you, too?
No, it's like I thought it was weird, and it made me just not think about it. I don't know, because when you said it, you said the number. I went, what? I didn't even understand what you were saying. I was like, how could Buffalo be getting points? How does that make sense? And by the way, why did that happen?
You know what this is commensurate to? Don playing the shell game with a blind person. That's exactly what he's doing.
The what game with a blind person?
The little shell game where you put a peanut and there's three shells and you move them around. They always do it in Times Square. Don's trying to rip off a blind person who can't see the shells.
That's us.
Yeah.
Well, that says something about us.
Do you know what happened 19 years ago today? 19 years ago today.
Hold on.
So it's 2000. Wait.
Yes, I do. George Bush threw out the first pitch.
No.
It was 2001.
Well, it was... Yeah, it would have been right around now.
Yeah, but it's not. That's not it.
But you said it like I was a moron. And Don, well, you would agree that's a great
George
call.
George Bush threw out the first pitch in Game 3 of the World Series. Is toward the end of October. When is Game 3 of the World Series ever on October 15th?
I don't know. A lot has
changed. October 13th. Stop it.
Don, he acted like it was a moronic thought.
Why? It wasn't bright. Why?
All right, so 2001, October 13th. That wasn't a Messina game, was it, against the Red Sox? No, that's too... That's another dumb Game 7.
I'll give you a clue. What's the name of my boss at Yes?
Oh, it's the Flip play against the A's.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I don't even hear from Flip anymore. I actually consider him out of my life.
Why?
He no longer exists to me. He used to hear from him all the time. He'd make a phone call.
Guy's trying
a text,
to run a
nothing.
Network.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, you know what Dave Rothenberg just told me? I asked R.J. Bell about the crazy spread. He said it wasn't legit. It was just a placeholder because the game was off the board. So you took a placeholder.
Wow.
Can we get Andrew?
Am I right now, Peter?
No. How am I supposed to know that? Why does Andrew send
Andrew.
Us the spread?
That's on Andrew. That's not on Don.
Why does Andrew?
It's a drop ball by Andrew. It is. It's awful.
Right. I mean, you see,
it's almost
sends
a suspendable offense.
He sends us the numbers. Those are the lines that we bet on. I look at the games. I see the Bills are getting 6.5. I like that game. Now, I knew that it was something that wasn't right, but why is that offered up to me? Why was it offered? It was offered up to all three of us, and you're going to both claim, oh, I just didn't think it was right to make the pick.
It was a play holder. It was a
you didn't even
holder.
Know that until 3 seconds ago.
But now I know it.
Why was it offered to me?
It was
why
used
was it offered
to hold
to me?
The spread.
Why was it offered to me?
I'm sorry, Michael. We just don't have any room here to argue.
I've got to play the game. 10, I've got to do. I now have
so
to investigate
badly.
Every line. That's what I'm not supposed to do. When
well, that
Andrew emails
like,
on Thursday, the line I'm supposed to go over every
I don't
line
know.
To make
according
sure it's
to
legit.
Your Don, according to your logic with me buying the crickets, you should also be investigating the lines. I'm going with you. Yes, you should be investigating the lines.
Stan Van Gundy emerging as a finalist and formidable candidate in New Orleans, according to Woj.
You guys respect the incarcerated Bob?
Well, of course I do.
He just DM'd me. He says, you made a sharp bet. No way should you apologize.
Andrew Gunling writes, I sent this to all of you on Friday. No one said a word. I gave you all fair warning. He said, I have no idea why, but this is a spread on rjbellspregame.com. In the column all the way to the left, it says postponed. Does that mean the game is to bet on? You knew what you were doing, Don. You took advantage
but
of really
I wish we could go back.
People.
RJ, why don't you go back? I called this to your attention before I made the pick, and nobody said boo.
You're not
nobody
even ashamed
said, I can't
of
believe you're
it.
Doing that.
A real, real guy, right, would say, listen, this bet doesn't apply. I'll just take the 1-point loss. That's what a real guy would do.
That's how about fine. How about this, Michael? Well, you want to take away this pick and offer him an extra pick next week?
I would do that.
All right, you want to do that?
No, I want you to take this pick because I think they're going to lose. And then when you win by 1 point, I have it over you.
I don't. They're not going to lose by more than 6.5 tonight. Maybe you and I should make another bet so you could be really into it. Give me the 6.5.
Bill's open.
Oh, and that means Donald lose.
Now Bill's a -3. Also, I forgot to bring this up to you. Rick DiPietro texted when you were talking about the Jets not winning a game. He said, I'll take the Jets winning a game against Peter. What does he want to bet? This could be a nice inner squad, inner show bet, something that would embarrass one of you.
Wait, between me and who?
Rick DiPietro.
Sorry, someone tweeted me something.
How about
important.
The bet is Peter's got to listen to the show?
No. Someone sent me the. This is more important than Rick. Sorry, no one cares what he says.
Oh, goodness.
Someone sent me the audio of Greg Gumbel.
Oh,
it's not good. This is not good.
No, there's a couple of things. It would be Yeah, there's a lot of issues. That's a shame. Can I just say something while we have time because there's no Keyshawn Johnson?
We really don't have time, but go ahead.
Sure we do.
That they do a fabulous show at 9 o'clock, 9 to 11. I mean, I listen every morning getting the kids fed and everything.
Oh, yeah.
Tremendous chemistry. I really enjoy that show.
And the double entendre filth that comes out of Rick's mouth is brilliant.
It really is. And sometimes you see it coming and then you think to yourself, he's not going to say, oh, he said it.
Well, and it's amazing, too, because it never stops.
Ever.
It's like a 13-year-old who never grew out of being 13.
How's it working out for him?
How's
it working out? Multimillionaire, great-looking wife, great-looking kids, three kids. How's it working out?
So you can't be critical of anything about anyone if they're successful in their life?
I just said, how's it working out for him? You're making
that
it as if it's a negative.
I don't know. It's fine, I suppose. I'm not saying that he's... I didn't even say it was a bad thing. I just said he's like a 13-year-old who's never aged. That's not a bad thing.
I'm like 13-year-old that's never aged. You never say that to me.
Oh, my God. This is so embarrassing. Your relationship really with him is so embarrassing. Both of you are such pathetic losers. No offense.
RJ has pulled a cut from last Friday defending Don, so let's listen.
As my one-point pick, and that's just really to avoid controversy, I have not been able to find the spread. It's almost like this game's off the board. It's the Tuesday game between the Bills and the Titans.
Wow, he was very honest.
So he robbed the bank in plain sight. Who cares? He still robbed the bank.
I laid it out for you. Why didn't you say, oh, you can't take that, that's off the board? You didn't say a word.
I don't listen to half the stuff you say.
Well, you know, maybe you should. Because I'm doing pretty well with the picks. And if I win this one, I'm 3-0.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.